Good afternoon, Greater Marion, Central Ohio, all of Ohio, and the world. We are here on the Steve Boom Boom Cannon Afternoon Radio Rampage.
He rode a blazing saddle. He wore a shining star. His job to offer battle to Batman near and far. He conquered fear and he conquered hate. He turned dark night into day.
Well, good afternoon and welcome into an elongated two-hour edition. We've started at 3 and we'll end at 5 today. And very honestly, the Cannon Show involves you as well as, of course, our guests and me, I hope. Unless I fall asleep. At any rate, interesting, unusual, famous, and controversial people each and every day on your Cannon Afternoon Radio Rampage. We got a great show today. In the last 15 minutes of the program, Columbus sports broadcast legend Mark Munch Bishop will join us. Munchie's in Cleveland, and he and I are going to talk about a couple of things. Pete in the Hall, and we're also going to talk about Tom Brady as well and his take on that as well as an ESPN commentator. In the last hour of the show, a former Miss America who went on to become some memorable characters. And, of course, we're talking about Catwoman in the Batman movie. We're talking about Lee Merriweather will join us today. And in this first hour of the Cannon Afternoon Radio Rampage, I will get to be reconnected with an old friend that I have known for several decades. And I'll give you a clue as to who that is right here. All right? One of the more entertaining shows of its period. One of those shows that has a long-time fan base as its support and is, in fact, once again on MeTV, is the Mod Squad. And not only am I finding out that there is a huge base as far as fandom is concerned for the show, but there is a huge fan base for my pal Michael Cole for many years. And Michael, it's wonderful to have you on the show again.
Thank you, Steve. Did that ever give me goosebumps hearing that music?
Yeah.
Whoa.
I still, when I see the show on MeTV, I still get goosebumps. It's one of the more exciting theme songs of the past 40 years in television.
I agree.
I guess maybe I should really kind of start at the beginning with this conversation. Oh, by the way, I got to tell you, Michael and I have known each other for a long time. One of the great things about the 1970s here in Ohio was the fact that in the Akron area where I was working at the time, there were two very good dinner theaters that had some terrific acting talent come in and do the work for them. We mentioned Cesar Romero from the Batman show, and of course, dozens of movies since the 1930s. I got a chance to hang out with Robert Cummings, Bob Cummings, a wonderful, strange man who was a lot of fun to be around. Chuck Connors came in and did dinner theater for us. Rue McClanahan came in and did dinner theater. The great Forrest Tucker. I mentioned Chuck Connors, who towered over me. I'm 6 feet tall. And of course,
he was a pro ball player for a while.
Absolutely. For several teams, as a matter of fact, and even played Celtics basketball, which I always have been excited about as a former Bostonian. And I got a chance to hang out with Michael Cole, and we've stayed close for all this time. We haven't seen each other for a while, but I had an exciting experience. I went to the event in Parsippany, New Jersey, and because I knew Michael was going to be there. Thank you, Wayne Shulman, for helping out, if you're listening today. The reality was that I stood off because Michael was, in fact, signing autographs and meeting with fans, and it was a lot of fun, and he looked up, and he saw me standing there, And for the both of us, it was like two brothers that hadn't seen each other in decades. And I appreciate your response to that, Michael. Thank you very much.
Well, the response was, when you're really close to someone, I don't think there is such a thing as time. And when I saw you, Steve, it's like we picked up right where we left off. And that to me is a sign of really close friendship. It was a surprise at that first few seconds, but then we just like went into wherever we left off 25 years ago or whatever it was.
Well, I don't even want to talk about whenever it was, because you're whenever it was. Linda and I both really enjoyed getting the opportunity to know you, and we talked about you all the time.
Yeah, and you told me some kind of sad news and et cetera, and I'm my deep, deep, deep condolences.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's still...
I bet it still is pretty rough, Steve.
Well, it's been a year and a half since I lost Linda, who was also my producer, and as well as my companion, friend, wife, the whole thing. But I was thinking about her today as I was coming into the station. I said, Linda would be thrilled to hear that Michael and I are reuniting on the radio.
Boy, that would be so neat just to be able to say hello. Well, we can say hello in our prayers.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would like to also add, if I could, Michael has a wife he's been with for a long time now. And
25 years.
Shelley Cole is a, if you'll pardon my expression, she is a pip. This is one of the most organized, husband-oriented and people-oriented individual I've ever met in my life. You guys make a tremendous team in a personal appearance setting.
Thank you. To be honest, Steve, I've been a bit of a wild one from time to time in my life.
I've heard that.
You've heard that? Yeah, okay. And I think right now, as we speak, I would be dead or in jail if it wasn't for Shelley. And we wouldn't be talking. So she saved my life, and she's just not going to get me choked up, because I'm so bloody fortunate to have her as my wife and my buddy, and like you said about Linda, all those great things.
One of those, she's a terrific counterpart, I'll tell you, and a friend to boot for you, I can tell. The funny part about it is, I was searching the internet the other night, and lo and behold, I ran across a movie that I never really knew existed, but I got...
Neither did anybody else.
Well, I got kind of excited about it, because it's about a topic that is dear to my heart, a government that gets so large and draconian, much like China, that it can, in fact, tell you how many children you can have. The movie was called The Last Child. He co-starred with Janet Margolin in that one. And I got to tell you, you guys did a wonderful job in that film.
Thank you. Thank you. That was really a special film at that time. Janet Margolin and Van Heflin, an Academy Award-winning actor. We really got some good ones in there. And I was honored to work with those people. And Harry Gardino was in it.
Right, Harry Gardino.
It bothered me in a sense, because we had to get out of the country, because there was a law that was passed that we could only have one child. Now, we had one child and we lost it. I think that's what it was, wasn't it, Steve?
Yeah.
And so we wanted another baby. And I happened to know about an old senator friend of mine. And we had to get our way to Canada to have this child. And we did. Yeah, I'm getting choked up thinking about it.
I tell you the truth, if I may just inject something quickly, I don't ever want the government in the United States to get that big. But that's only my own personal comment that I want to add to it. I must tell you, though, it was a terrific film.
Thank you. It worked out well. It really did.
Now,
and
everybody.
Was an Aaron Spelling production, too.
You've had good luck with Aaron Spelling, haven't you?
I think together we did some pretty good stuff. Yep.
Yep, absolutely. Now, you brought up a name here that was of great interest to me. I've been a fan of Harry Guardino most of his acting career. And in conversation with Gavin McLeod at the event in New Jersey, I discovered that he had a high opinion also of Harry Guardino as one of the best actors in films. How was your feeling working with him?
I was so proud to work with him. You know, there was a group of great Broadway and New York actors that came out at one time, and Harry was one of them. They were like a bunch of Italian guys. When they said Harry Guardino was going to be it, and he was going to be his tough kind of self, I was just thrilled and honored. And then all of a sudden, to throw in Van Heflin, who won an Academy Award.
Absolutely.
I said, this is, and then Janet Margolin. My God, with David and Lisa, that was an old film. If you have never heard of it, try and get it to all, you know, all the people out there. She was brilliant. I was just very lucky. Just very lucky. And The Last Child was a little bit of ahead of its time, but that was Aaron Spelling again.
Who tended to be a little ahead of his time in most of the things that he wound up producing. Michael, let's go back to the beginning of the big era in your life, and I guess it may have been for a lot of viewers, because the fan response has been absolutely phenomenal.
Wonderful.
How did the Mod Squad come about?
I'll just tell you it started off where the guy that kind of had a germ of a thought, they wanted it with us carrying machine guns and all kinds of crap. Is it okay to say that?
Yeah, it's all right. Okay.
All right. And I and Aaron and some other people said, no. That's not what this is about. And so we used... Do you remember that great scene in James Dean's Rebel Without a Cause, where he and Sal Mineo and the girl...
Wonderful. You had to hit me with that, didn't you?
Yeah, well...
Some King of Trivia.
Natalie Wood.
Natalie Wood, yeah.
Yeah, they were getting trouble for. They were getting in trouble at
right.
school and all that stuff like that. So they made up their own family in this mansion, and you know, in Rebel Without a Cause.
Sure, I recall.
And we, because of the Captain Greer, Tige Andrews, we made up our own family and just stuck together. But we wouldn't be full-blown cops, and we were kind of like beat. We were from the beat generation, and I happened to live in San Francisco right before we did that, and it was fabulous. That's what it was. If you're going to San Francisco, be sure to wear a flower in your hair. But there's another thing that we started to. When I heard that thing about all the guns and that, I said, no, we're peace, we're for love and peace and all that stuff. Let's not carry any guns. So we made it a point in that show. That show was ahead of its time, too. I'm very proud of it. Every time there was a weapon involved, we took it and we made a point of throwing it out into the ocean or stuff like that, getting rid of the weapons.
Sure.
And that was a big comment on the Mod Squad.
One of the interesting things about the show for me was the fact that Tige Andrews, who played a typical suit, for lack of a better term, became part of that family that you three had already created for yourself, the three characters.
Yeah, if it wasn't for Tiger, we'd probably still been doing time.
Yeah. Now, there's another guy who was one of those terrific character actors that whenever you see him on screen, you know you're going to get a good performance. What was it like working with him?
First of all, he's very emotional, and he's very strong, very family-oriented. You've got to know that. He had about 40 kids. And they were all beautiful. And Tiger was also a war hero. I mean, he really did the battle stuff and that. But when we first met Tiger, it was, he had done another show that I had seen him in. And so I said, whoa, this is a good actor. We can sure as hell come off of this. And I went to, oh, here's a neat little story about Tiger.
Go ahead.
Tig was, he was a Broadway guy, Broadway actor.
A stage man, right.
Yes, and he was the first one ever to sing Mac the Knife on Broadway.
I never knew that.
Nobody does. And he actually did it with Lottie Linear.
And for those who don't know who Lotta Linea is, Lotta Linea was the actress who played the little lady with the knife in her foot and from Russia from Love. That's Lotta Linea. She's a famous stage star.
Yes, and very good, Steve. Thank you. And Miss Linea was in the play with Tig, and her name is in the song, Mac the Knife.
Yep, absolutely.
And so when we all got together, finally, the whole thing was cast, which was really kind of rough because, well, we can talk about Clarence and Peg and that in a minute. When it was finally cast, we became our own, truly our own little family. We had a lot of battles with networks around the country, et cetera, et cetera. Because of the racial thing, and there wasn't too many shows. As a matter of fact, I always used to like to say that Clarence was probably the first black guy, first African American ever to beat the hell out of a white guy on television.
Well, very honestly, once you saw the three of you, you knew, A, you had three very special actors, but you also knew that with Clarence and yourself, and Peggy as well, Clarence was a guy, he played the character so that you felt, as the audience member, here's a guy who I'd like to have my back. If I needed him, he'd be there. And if he took the lead, I'd follow him into the jaws of hell. That was really the kind of impression he gave to the audience, I thought.
And he was still, Steve, he was like that in real life. With me, anyway. We became really fond of each other, and we still are. Still very, very close, in our hearts.
One of your fans wanted me to ask you this question.
Okay.
And I've got a number of questions from fans as well that I'm going to ask, if I may. But I want to know. Apparently, at one time during the 70s, I think it was, Peggy dated Elvis Presley. Is that true?
Yes.
How close did they get?
Not very.
Oh, okay. What did she think?
Peggy's got a book out now.
Oh, I didn't know that.
She's been out for a while. And it's called Breathing Out, and she talks about Elvis in there too. And Elvis was getting on, and there was a lot of problems. And Peggy was kind of, I tell you the truth, they got along well, as far as I know. But I they were not destined to be like she and Quincy Jones eventually, to be married and to love each other for the rest of their days. Elvis was, he was really starting to have some problems, and it
was being
hard to talk about Elvis, really, because we, on one hand, we deeply loved him and admired him, and on the other hand, we felt kind of sorry for this guy toward the end. And that's the way I feel, anyway.
He got fairly heavy.
It wasn't just that.
He had other problems?
Yeah, well, the problems with, we all heard about the drugs and all that stuff.
Sure.
And his life was just turned around. And it was, I don't think he, it's a personal feeling, but I don't think he really, I think he wanted out.
I had an incident happen to me that I regret to this day, but the person who I'm going to talk about, you actually knew, I think, on a personal level. One of your fans wanted me to ask you this question, but I'm going to tell you this quick incident. A friend of mine, Larry Goldman, who was a publicist in Hollywood, he and his wife took Linda and I, we had gone out to do my show Back to Columbus from Los Angeles, and he took me to the El Padrino Lounge at the Beverly Wilshire, and we're sitting there, and we're talking, and we're laughing, and having a good time, and there's one guy with a full blonde beard and a jumpsuit on, talking to some guy in a hard hat, sitting at the bar, and Larry says to me, "You see those two guys over there? Oh, yeah, they must be doing construction somewhere in the building." He said, "No, the guy with the beard is Steve McQueen." So got the impression. Is that the kind of guy he was?
Yes, that fits. I don't know why he had the beard. Maybe it was for a part or something.
Okay.
But when I first met him, I was really kind of nervous. Somebody said we were on location somewhere around here. And Clarence and I were talking and just waiting for the next shot. And all of a sudden it got real quiet, all of the whole crew and that. And Clarence says, "Look, Mick, look who's coming over." And I'll be a son of a gun if it wasn't Steve.
Okay.
Steve McQueen. And so I didn't know whether to just start crying, genuflect. And he walked over, and he was Steve McQueen. He was kind of quiet. He was Steve McQueen. What can I say? And he walked up to me and he said, "Hey, Michael." Now, in the first place, I'm really excited because he knew my name. And he said, "I understand you just got married. Or I hear you just got married. How did you know that?" "Oh, I heard it." "Hey, man, I wish you well." And we became friends after that. And I'd see him at the Whiskey A Go-Go. Very famous,
discotheque in Los Angeles, sure.
Yeah, right in L.A. And he was really one of my favorite actors at that time, too. So it wasn't just the fact of meeting Steve McQueen and him coming over and knowing who I was. But he was deeply respected in my heart as an actor. And then so we'd go up to the Whiskey and we'd meet, we'd hang out. He was the only guy I knew other than I was adopted for a little while. At one time, and Steve drank rye whiskey.
I'm a rye whiskey drinker myself.
You are?
Yeah. Well, I don't drink it. I don't drink anymore because
I know three people: my ex-stepfather, my stepfather, Steve, and now you that drank rye. Because that's the real deal.
Yeah, indeed it is. It's been a long time since I've had a drink because of medication I take for other problems. But the reality is I would love to have a nice glass over the rocks. But that's for another day. Okay.
Steve, wait a minute. Let me throw this one in there.
Go ahead.
I've got 19 years sobriety.
Oh, God bless you. Good for you, pal.
Yeah, I know. And there again, Shelley shows up. She's basically the reason.
Now, you did Betty Ford, too, right?
Yeah, I did everybody.
You did Betty Ford, the clinic, of course. But Shelley has been the one who's really kind of kept you on the straight and narrow and helped you through that recovery process, right?
Absolutely. And it's out of pure love.
It's wonderful. My friends who are listening on the radio, it is wonderful to have a partner like that. I want you to know, if you don't have one, you should. By the way, I'm Steve Cannon. This is WWGH 107.1. And if you would like to email us a question for Michael Cole from the Mod Squad, who is our guest on this portion of the show, and Dozen Films as well, feel free to do so, www.WWGH1071.com. Once again, www.WWGH1071.com. Go to the internet and drop us a question, or to the station's website as well. That would be fine. One of the other things that I want to talk about, and very honestly, I got the first notion that this was coming off when we were together in New Jersey several weeks ago. A lady by the name of Michelle wants to know, and so do I, when is the autobiography you're doing due to be finished and come out? Have you any inkling of when you're going to finish that?
Yeah, that's a rough one. It's hard to write a book, and especially for, I'm not a writer. When somebody says you should write a book, I thought maybe I should read one first. I didn't get along in school too well. I love education, but I hated school. It was telling you what to do. I'm not good at taking instructions.
Taking instructions, right? You like learning, but you
authority and I never got along.
Ah, good. Okay.
And that's why I guess I didn't get along in school, but I loved education. Anyway, where were we now with this question?
The question basically was, any indication of when the book might be finished?
Uh-huh. I'm sitting at a desk right now, a big table, and there's so much stuff that I've written and started and written and stopped and written and stopped, et cetera, et cetera. I've got a couple of things that are kind of closing for the end, and I'm going for the middle of the summer, and I've been talking to so many, but if there's any publishers and editors or anything like that that could get a hold of you sometime, or me, or through the Screen Actors Guild, I'd be very interested in talking to them about publishing and giving me a little bit of a hand with this thing, because doing the book with all the stuff I've done in my life is kind of rough.
You've had a good time, but you've had a rough time. You've been a good guy, but you've been a tough guy. And I think there are a lot of stories in your life that will make for excellent reading if someone wants to publish a book, an autobiography of Michael Cole that he is, in fact, writing right now. I guess one of the things I got some other information from one of your fans, and it immediately needled me to ask you this question. One of my favorite singers of all time.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, my buddies and I picked up an album This is when I was a little younger. A bunch of buddies of mine and I picked up an album of Bobby Darin live from Las Vegas, and we would pick a song off that album and lip sync that song in front of the rest of the guys as we assembled in my living room many times. You were friendly with Bobby Darin, played ball with him, didn't you?
Yes, I wasn't. We weren't really close because... I don't know because, but Bobby was kind of a secretive guy and kind of quiet a lot of times. But also, I was one of, not just a fan. You can't say Bobby Darin without without a certain amount of respect.
Absolutely.
He was not only an incredible singer, wonderful actor. He kind of had a little bit of an awkward life, too, let me put it that way.
Sure he did.
But he, as a matter of fact, when Bobby Kennedy was killed out here.
Right.
Bobby Darin got in his van, and I think he went up north somewhere, and nobody ever saw him again. He was very sensitive to that. Bobby, I was a bus boy. Can you believe this? In Las Vegas.
Go ahead.
No, not a bar boy.
Bar boy. Okay.
Yeah, that's much closer to my heart than a bus boy. And Bobby Darin, at one time I worked at a place called the Thunderbird. And
one of the legendary hotels on the Strip. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. And Sinatra would come in, and Mr. Martin, and one night Bobby Darin was in there too, and I just couldn't hold myself back, and I went up to him, and with my little bar boy jacket on and bartender jacket, and said, "Excuse me, Mr. Darin, can I have your autograph?" And he stopped and he put his arm on my shoulder and he said, "Absolutely, man, thanks for asking." And he was one of the neatest guys, and that's how we started to kind of be friends and whatever. But I love them. There's a story, I don't know if it's really true or not, but Bobby was getting, oh, there goes Mac the Knife again. All of a sudden I thought of Tige. There was a picture they had of Dean Martin and Frank Sinatra, and it was in a dartboard. And there was a picture of those guys throwing darts at Bobby Darin's picture.
Well, at one point, one of the few public mistakes that Bobby Darin ever made was saying that I'm going to be bigger than Sinatra. And that,
well, maybe that's the reason.
That could have been the reason why. That's amazing. Let me get to, if I could, quickly, a couple of the questions from audience members, if I might. Michael, are you flattered that lately so many of your fans have shown so much interest in you? And are you happy that you have a new fan club with so many devoted members, and they are totally devoted to you? This is from the president of that fan club, Stephanie.
Oh, man. She is so cool. So cool. I'm more than flattered. First of all, Steve, you know me well enough to grasp this. I don't like to call all the good people out there that have followed Michael and whatever he's done, good or bad. I don't like to call them fans. I like to call them my friends.
Terrific.
And that's coming from my heart for all you people out there. And Stephanie, she all of a sudden just kind of was there. After all this time, I had no idea that all this stuff was going on. But Michelle just said something. The what? Yeah, Leslie and Greg did the Mod Squad page. It's on the computer thing.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, Facebook. And I'm surprised, but I just want to say thank you to my friends, and them to know that it's more than a fan to me. Every single one of them, and I think that's what I tried to do on Mod Squad. I cared. That show was about caring. And if these people care for myself still after all these years, it means a deep, tremendous amount to me.
There was another piece of mail that I got too, from a woman. I'm assuming it's a woman, although there are some men named Lynn, but the woman named...
Yeah, like a great ball player named Lynn Swan.
Absolutely. Who, by the way, piece of trivia on Lynn Swan. Lynn Swan worked out with the Pittsburgh Ballet Company.
Yes, I know that. So did a couple of the wide receivers did that.
That's why how they stayed in shape. Anyway, yeah. Thank you so much for interviewing Michael, Lynn says. We are looking forward to the interview. I have two questions. Does Michael watch a lot of TV these days? And if so, what does he enjoy watching?
I don't really watch a lot of TV. I don't have any shows that I particularly like. You know what happens is a lot of the shows, the series anyway, I kind of know what's going to happen because of being around it for so long.
Right.
But all the sports stuff, and we got kind of hooked on National Geographic channel too, and we're both animal, Shelley and I are both animal freaks, and there's a couple of shows. What?
The Animal Planet.
And right.
Yeah.
And the political things, very interested in all that stuff. But not a lot of shows. I'm just not interested in them.
Now, that's the thing. Why can't I find a woman like that will sit and watch National Geographic, Animal Planet, and maybe Criminal Minds, which I think is one of the best shows on television.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
That's
when Shelley and I first met, we started going to Lakers games all the time because that's when the Lakers were, you know, Magic Johnson.
Really hot. Sure. Big players.
And all those guys. And, She was with GQ magazine, and so we always had good tickets, et cetera. And she was like a great fan. She knew Magic, and she knew some of those guys from being such an important part of GQ magazine, which
right.
they would be in and all that stuff. But she'd get up and she'd start screaming if they did something wrong. I mean, really screaming.
Oh, I love it.
You dumb.
Yeah, I know. I know the words, believe me.
Yes. And there was a couple of guys behind us that said, "Lady, have you got your own franchise by any chance? Well, you should get one."
That's so funny.
In New York, we had Pat Riley's floor seats. So she worked that out. No, she's a huge, and now, of course, she's a big Seahawks fan. She's
I see. Okay.
But again, like you said, our first conversation, the first night we met, we've never been apart. And we talked about sports. We talked about writers. We talked about... throw existentialism in there.
Kelly's Shelley is cueing him in the background. I can hear her.
Yeah, I know. That's what
I love it. I love it. That's what a married couple ought to be, guys. Also, this Lynn wanted to know. Is it overwhelming, or surreal for you? She says to realize that you played an iconic character on an iconic television series and one of the most of its kind in history, in this Lynn's opinion. What's your response?
Thank you, Lynn. Thank you very, very much. No, it's not overwhelming, because to me, acting was essentially what the hell I've been doing all my life anyway, trying
right.
to get out of trouble.
Sure.
I was acting my way out of trouble, and it really, as a matter of fact, I wanted to do it my way so bad the first time I met Aaron Spelling, I told him that the show was dumb, and I hoped it never got on the air. And Aaron was a little guy anyway, and he had, like, big eyes and stuff, and his eyes started to pop. And my agent was sitting there with me, and he had beads of perspiration on his forehead. Michael's killing himself, and he hasn't even worked yet.
And the agent's going into cardiac arrest.
Right, exactly. And so, anyway, Aaron said, that's not what the show is about. That's not what we're going to try and do. And I said, Aaron, thank you, but I don't want to have any part of this if I'm going to be busting my friends, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Then he started to say some of the other things about the show that we were trying to cover. The racial tones and all that stuff like that.
Sure.
And I started to kind of renege a little bit, but I said, nah, I'm sorry, give me a motorcycle or something like that, and I'm out of it. Aaron jumped up on his desk and said, that's exactly what I want.
Terrific.
That's exactly what I want, Michael. I mean, I thought he was going to throw me off the lot, but it didn't. It turned out that's what you're Pete Cochran. You are Pete Cochran. So, Lynn, that's how that all started.
Good producers many times listen to the actors, and that's how they get the product done properly. And I think that's a good thing from the standpoint of Aaron Spelling. I got an email from a Donna who is from Florence, South Carolina, who's going to be listening today. Are there many roles that you wish you would have done, and why?
One, Donna, I've always wanted, and I did it, but it was a bad one. I always wanted to play a priest. And I think I can tie that back. A priest like Montgomery Clift.
One in I Confess.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. I wanted to do that because we were born and raised Irish Catholic. But I also had some problems, again, me having problems with authority, like the church, because they excommunicated my mother. And I didn't like that at all, as far as I was concerned, my mother was approaching sainthood. So she worked very hard to keep me and my brother and her together. Never met our dad, our biological father, anyway. And when that happened, we were very, very unhappy. So I've always wanted to play a priest like the one in I Confess, like Montgomery Clift. That was neat that you knew that film.
One of Montgomery Clift's best movies, as far as I'm concerned. Now, one of the other questions, this one came from Joy. Joy and I have been communicating on the fan page off and on for some time. There were crimes that Pete and Julian Link had, in fact, committed. And to get together finally with Tig Andrews' character and become part of the Mod Squad team. How do you feel about people who commit those kinds of crimes, and specifically drug-related crimes? Any thoughts on that?
I don't know that many people that haven't done drugs or, tried anyway.
Right. I'm one of them, by the way.
There you go.
Never did it.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. I was always kind of afraid of drugs, but I drank too much.
See, I was one of those guys that when I was invited to a party where drugs were prominent, I would be sure there was a six-pack of Bud Light somewhere around. And I never did drugs because I'm nuts enough as it is. I don't need to get more nuts. So I just said, forget it.
Well, it might have calmed you down.
It's well, that too. It might have. Michael Cole, I tell you what, for all of the listeners who were with us today, and for all who have, in fact, sent questions in, I hope I got to as many as I could. We have been thrilled beyond words, pal, for us to get together again. And I'm so glad you came on the show today. Thank you so very, very much.
Steve, I hope my friends, new and old out there listening, you know, if they just want to give a shout out to you or to the Mod Squad fan page or all that stuff like that. And again, the book is coming out. We're trying for this summer.
And what about a part that might be coming up soon for you, if any?
Right now, I'm concentrating on this book.
That's terrific. We're going to be looking forward to that. For all of you in the Mod Squad and Michael Cole Fan Club who have kind of taken me to your bosom, thank you for that so much, and I hope you were listening today. And please give Shelley a big fat kiss for me, because she's some...
I will do that. And again, I'm very touched by you, by hooking up with you again, and being able to talk to me.
With no...
There's many, many friends that I had no idea were still out there, and I love that.
I want to say, with no shame intended and no shame involved whatsoever, I love you, brother. I hope we can get together again soon.
God bless, and wish you well.
God bless you too, Michael. Thank you so very much. Coming up in the next hour, after our top of the hour break, we're going to be talking to actress Lee Merriweather, a former Miss America. And that's going to be kind of fun, because we're going to talk about a lot of things, including, of course, the Catwoman. And at 4:45 this afternoon, we're going to be joined by Mark Munch Bishop, sports legend from Columbus, Ohio, and now ESPN contributor and sportscaster in the Cleveland area. We're going to talk about Tom Brady, and was it enough? Four games, and what is it lousy that Major League Baseball will not put Pete Rose in the Baseball Hall of Fame? So that's the next hour. Stick around for the remaining hour of the Steve Cannon Afternoon Radio Rampage on 107.1 FM WWGH. Stay with us. More to come.